Well, that, I wrote a little ditty about Adya Shante. Adya Shante, Adya Shante.
Kiss my ass, kiss what? My ass.
What do you think is selling? Who do you think is selling to? Go away, go away.
Has it gone viral on YouTube?
If you sing it, we'll film it. Then it'll go viral.
That will go up.
A useful theme that showed up during yesterday's program was more or less, this feels great, right? Hanging out in the dojo with a little meditation under your belt and a little, you know, non-dual radiant thing, lofting everyone out of themselves. This feels great. But it's not the way I feel at home.
We talked about that.
Right? So the bridge, you could say your entire life, once you get inoculated with the curious nature of what this might be, is the bridge.
Yes.
Right? The bridge meaning I saw a thing, I felt a thing, I discovered a confidence in a thing that somehow I trust or am compelled to discover, and it's not occupying my daily experience. Right? So you go on a retreat with a celebrity of some kind, and you get an inoculation of some. And it may be joyful or thrilling or real nice, but it's always accompanied by some kind of depression or lamentation because, oh, this is an artificial environment, but I can't go to an artificial environment, you know, every day or every weekend, and what little meditation or whatever I do at home doesn't seem to be all that lasting because I find myself entranced or ensconced in the imagination of my life as the person I've always taken myself to be, and I'm wondering what else is possible.
Getting high is another form of addiction.
Yeah, one of the gentlemen there was very articulate on that point. This feels great, and now that I've noticed it,
how do I get my fix again? I want to come down.
He used the word addiction, you know, more than once in his discovery of, you know, this notion of the bridge.
We're all a bunch of junkies. At heart, we're all junkies.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Right.
But out of necessity.
Well, design, if design is necessity.
Yeah.
And, I mean, even design is too solid.
Yeah.
But you can observe, you know, how you walk through a day or meander through a day or stay under the covers through a day. And, right, feel the currents of design, necessity, of interest in sensation. And that, I guess we're all addicts because we continue to be interested in sensation.
Well,
or the optimization of it.
Optimization of it. You know,
right? Yeah.
And that seems to optimize. I'm going to get as much as I can of that.
Yeah.
And then over the top and work the top.
Right. So the Buddhist point about optimization, which is bipolar. Optimization means, in that case, clinging and aversion, right? Moving toward or away from. That's optimization of the current texture of experience from the vantage point of the imagination of an individual being on the receiving end of that experience. So it's we're basically moving through what we call life in an unconscious manner in a profound impulse field.
Hey, what what I meant
that's
by...
That's an interesting definition for addiction. That's it.
And isn't it?
It's not really something you... I don't know that you can do anything about that. You know, that's not really necessarily a...
Good question.
Problem.
What my feeling is...
Yeah,
like,
really.
You know, it's like, we're so used to living in the imaginary world.
Yes.
But part of it is that isn't the real world. So that's why, by necessity, we're constantly kind of back and forth because, and then once you get a glimmer, then you're so frustrated when you're in the imaginary world, but it's still to remain in the, just the actuality of this. Apparently very difficult.
Yeah, that's right. Apparently very difficult.
So it's kind of like taking this imaginary world apart.
Yeah.
I think it just begins to rip you apart yourself.
Well,
it has to.
It seems to do a good job of that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's taking it apart or letting it happen.
Letting it?
Yeah, happy. Letting it rip you to shreds.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Well, I guess there's no real difference.
Well, taking it apart implies there's someone there taking it apart.
Right. Sure.
Well, the nature of engagement is also strange. Because if you were purely a robotic Borg, then you wouldn't, the curious nature of engaging with your experience would not occur.
No.
Right? If you were purely under the hypnotic influence of something, then the appearance, whether dreamlike or actual, gift of engagement would not occur. Yeah, sure. You can mix it. Thank you. But how is it that we know what's happening, or how we're feeling about it, or how we recognize the impulse field that says, I'm hungry, I gotta pee, that's a bad feeling, that's a good feeling, I'm gonna make a phone call, I'm not, I'm gonna do my taxes, fuck it, you know, I better call the doctor, or my therapist. Right? You can see how just lingering around, even if you're engaged in stuff, impulses just are arriving. And the impulse is more subtle than you could say what's even thought or felt about it. Right? A raw impulse is what exactly?
Kind of like energy going through.
And we can use those metaphors from science or spirituality or wherever to say it's prana, it's energy, it's an impulse field, it's a circuit board, it's a, you know.
It's funny, I was thinking about this the other day, how, like, someone posted some fantastical electrical kind of phenomena on Facebook or something.
Yeah.
Nobody is like, look at what my electrician did today, you know, it's just because it's, like, something that's...
Right.
Yeah. Seemingly, you know, that we like make something feel about it. It's funny though.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you talk to someone, you're like, oh, I'm an electrician. You're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, right. Like, right. I'm not worthy.
Yeah. You've never seen electricity. Nobody knows how that works. You know what I mean? But that's like.
Yeah. So this is this kind of approach of the recognition of the impulse field. The impulse field is felt. It's felt by you, or felt by something, and you just happen to be in the crosshairs of something feeling an impulse field. You know, you're in the middle of a food fight, and you know stuff is flying across the room. Something is is of the nature of an impulse field. And then it interjects itself, meaning you, as a creature, right? As an individuated creature in the midst of a profound impulse field. And that sense of being a creature in a truly impersonal, spontaneously arising impulse field is referred to as I. There's nothing wrong with that. that we call, this I, does not necessarily commit you to suffering, does it? So someone who's way more spiritual than any of us could say, well, there's no I. Okay, but what do you mean by that? You know, there's tons of I. How about this bizarritude occurring as an impulse field?
Suffering doesn't even commit you to suffering.
No.
You look at it the way you just said.
No, it doesn't.
If you get to the raw experience of it, suffering isn't even suffering.
Yeah.
It can't be.
No, it can't be.
Well, you have to answer from the word, but anything.
Yeah, so let's play with the apparent geometry of, okay, spontaneously, impersonally, radiantly, irrefutably arising impulse field, which is felt. Jesus Christ, what is this? And I, just as the word, is not a problem because this is appearing to appear or appearing to occur. It's irrefutable from where you stand that there's an impulse field cascading in your face faster than you can say no thanks. And so we say I. And the impulse field, this is a fun one, is the impulse field appearing to you as a body, or is what we're referring to as the impulse field source genesis of the notion of body? Are you body first and then impulse field? Or is impulse field disembodied, transcendent, owing to no one and nothing, actually primary, and the body is an idea that appears as a consequence of the impulse field?
It can be.
It's up to you. I mean, you know, one thing may or may not be true to the contrary of something else, so it's really up to you. Yeah. But it's interesting to feel the impulse field, which is your present experience, like it or leave it, love it or not. This is the impulse field. Is this impulse field present as the consequence of your having a body, or your being conscious, or is conscious and body the artifacts of the impulse field? And even your capacity, which is a miracle, to attend to the nature of mind. Don't you? You attend to mind. Otherwise, how would you be able to have or interpret or express what we refer to as a sentence, a paragraph, a thought, a feeling, language? You attend to mind. What is it that's attending to mind? It's hard to say what might or might not be necessary, but the mind as content, in order for it to have the capacity for assuming meaning, has to be attended to.
Assuming meaning.
No, not really. Could we say that assuming meaning is simply what this is, what this does? Right? With or without necessity? Even look subtly. If for fun, let's just drop beneath the surface of mind. Oh, that was easy. Everything is still being felt. Five senses. You could say, you know, subtle or gross thought is still appearing, but you've sunk beneath the surface of it all. Attending is still. I think meaning is an inevitability of or as the impulse field itself. And what I mean by meaning is not necessarily that we've parsed experience into words. right? Yeah. Irrefutability of an impulse field and the sense of being the recipient of or the noticer or the or attending to the impulse field is a kind of meaning without assuming words. And we could say that that subtle subtle observation of impulse field and meaning as the same thing is arguably or suggestibly underneath what shows up as consciousness or body. Consciousness is just a word, like any of these are, that suggests, oh, the weird presence of impulse field being felt. What else, right? What else would you say consciousness is? Impulse field being felt. So consciousness, therefore, is... You can take it off the table because it's right. It's just it's just a reference. It's not a thing. You could do the same thing with awareness or any word that we select. Okay, that word has to imply what? They all have to imply, oh, impulse field being felt. So that in that way, we don't have to fetishize consciousness, awareness, the absolute, or all these words that you find in the Pali or the Sanskrit language. Because they're truly useless. They're poetic. Rumi got some mileage out of them, you know, as well as others. But you can take them off the table with respect to the, pristine appreciation of an impulse field being felt. Yeah, yeah. That's the implied transmutation. Yeah. That's the implied transmutation.
Most of suffering is I
don't, you know, it should be different.
All suffering is the anthropomorphization or reification of an impulse field being felt.
Oh, just look at the thoughts and see, would they trouble you if you didn't believe they were your thoughts?
Yeah, right. Right. That's simple.
If that same thought has a target on somebody else, would you be that concerned about it?
Yeah, you're not that concerned when it's someone else's suffering.
Because it's attached to you. Imagine that it's attached to somebody else and you're really giving
it. I know. Yeah.
It's all that ownership that we accept, and the ownership is just fiction.
Ownership is fiction. Yeah.
I know, we feel bad if someone else is suffering or having crazy thoughts, but
yeah, now
we're thinking,
long.
Thank God it's not me.
Pretty much.
You can feel bad for yourself this long.
Yeah.
And then it's like, that's for dinner.
You know, Buddhism, all of Buddhism could be broke down into ownership is fiction. Ownership is fiction. That's the glazed over look of some local enlightened person, if there were any. Ownership is fiction. That has come to roost. Let's say deeply. Right?
Those damn chickens are shitting all over my life.
And it's fine for ownership is fiction to roost occasionally. Because once it roosts in your experience occasionally, you're done. You're going to come undone. Whether that's in the next second or week or lifetime, or it doesn't really matter. Really, it doesn't matter. Even though when we're suffering, it really seems to matter, right? If I'm suffering and I've caught a glimpse of ownership as fiction, you could say the suffering's almost, you know, has an extra kick to it. Right? Because now it's worse. It's worse that I'm suffering because I know that I've seen once or twice, maybe 100 times, I've seen that ownership is fiction. And yet, I will bite your hand off if you come near me. Right? And you're like, ah. So that goes back to the perennial exploration of the bridge. the bridge is, hey, I get it. I have seen, to my heart's content, at least once, for long enough, that ownership is fiction.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to stay long.
Then you get all frustrated about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're practicing ownership when you're reaching for nonfiction.
In human terms, like, I'm a babbling idiot, and every turn I'm fucked. Like, oh, God, I made another mistake. You wander around your whole life, like, yourself.
Yep.
That's one of them.
Yeah.
Like, did I just do that? Really? Like, I was doing good for 5 seconds, and then...
5 seconds is a good run.
Yeah.
Wow. I actually didn't say anything for 5 seconds, and it was feeling decent.
But you're owning the battle.
Who knows? Yeah?
Anyway.
Yeah.
Well,
we think we
every turn you're screwed
because because we operate. Let's say we operate behaviorally, and so we tell stories, which is mentally, psychologically, emotionally, about the reflection of our life as a right system, a compendium of behaviors that either I have expressed amongst others or in the privacy of my bizarre world, or others have expressed toward me, right? So we're in a, right? The impulse field, when it's amongst what we call humans, is truly a, you know, a behavioral orchestra.
And that's what I mean by that. Like, in my case, anyway, I'm screwed. Like, anytime I make a move, I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
And so that the...
It's automatically wrong.
Right. Yeah, right. That's kind of fun. Maddening. Maddening to the point of self-asphyxiation.
Well, if you look at it, it really is, no matter what. There's always somebody, you know, it's like one person might agree with you, the other person doesn't. This person hates you, that person loves you. There's always that.
Yeah.
You're kind of just screwed. You can't win that system.
Yeah. You know you can't win that system.
There's not right or wrong in the end, and there's not good or bad, and there's unless you, for me,
yes,
accept that everything that comes out of your mouth cannot be correct. So what's the difference?
There's that.
You know?
Yeah. Yes, but
here's,
well, of course, here's, let's say here's the geometry of a certain kind of conversation. We're continually falling into the next babbling moment as a cacophony of the profundity of behavior or cognition of an impulse field.
And that's perfectly fine.
Well, let's hope so, because that's all that's happening. Right?
Uh-huh.
So in playing with attention, which is what we do, we're playing with attention. When we have a conversation like this, the notion is we lend our attention, you could say cooperatively, to the field, and the field replies humorously and creatively to the attention itself. Because your mind is a brilliant, you could say, you know, disco ball of possibility. And just by lending your attention to present experience, light's shooting all over the place. So that's what we're, right? That's what we're playing with, is in a sense reinforcing, replicating, repeating, not that that could actually occur, reinforcing that the quality of attention, the quality of observation turns out to be prophetically, unimaginably playful.
And a lot broader, which is a joke, than human terms, so, you know,
mm-hmm.
Not just
yes.
In that little framework.
Right. So that's why, the, you know, even though all phrasing's a little curious, it was fun to refer to the Night Sky Sangha, where people say, what's the blurb, as a dreaming cooperative. If a group of people gets together and we're all vying for attention rather than lending attention, well, you know where that goes. You know, that's like any business meeting.
Yeah.
Nobody, no one walks away too nourished by it. Because
the argument clinic.
Right.
The argument clinic. Yes, it is. No, it
isn't. Well, I have a question.
Yes, of course.
Here we go. Here we go. So, there is a difference in quality of when you're giving your attention to something.
Yeah.
And
force it. Right.
And when you're just like standing back.
Standing back, sure.
Because the one is one thing smaller, I guess, the other and then the other thing more relaxed.
What was the Buddhist one-liner? Ownership is illusion. I forget what we said a minute ago. Yeah, that's great.
Ownership is fiction.
Ownership is fiction.
So in a situation like this, where you're having a more detailed discussion.
Yes.
For me, it engages a different. It feels different.
Sure. Yeah.
And it feels.
Yeah. Right. Ownership is fiction suggests smaller. Right.
Well, when you're listening to something and picking it apart, like you said, it would more be, okay, I see the world this way, and I'm comparing and contrasting and trying to figure out what somebody's saying from my framework. That's ownership. Whereas if you're just listening and let it roll over you, that's the other of what you're talking about, I think. And I think the big words and the lack of understanding, especially initially sitting here, helps a lot because you can't pick it apart because you don't know what the hell Jeff's talking about. You just let it roll over you.
Yeah. Well, it's like foreign. You just stepped into a foreign land where you're like, is everybody here Chinese?
All
right, so
is this like some Polish theater group?
Let's hope that.
So if I go from that, then I am thinking that the error is that I thought I was going to learn something. Right?
There's nothing to learn.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's just fun. The notion of having a bridge between an insight that really got in you and your reflection on your so-called daily living. You could say everyone wants to figure out how to be as enlightened as, let's say, Adam Chaxfield. Or whomever you've paid to see.
Or didn't pay to see.
Or didn't pay to see. Yes, it is. Yeah. And he wants to see you, he told me, specifically. I'm teasing.
Oh, God. It was getting interesting.
Yeah, really. What?
Oh, my God.
I don't know how to
is he single?
We know he's skinny. That's about all we know.
Yeah. That's all you need to know.
And how he sits.
I think. Would you like to school from that? Can we do it properly so we can get there?
No, I think it's just you that thinks, like, well, sorry about that.
But hey, if she feels it, she's going to do it. Right.
So fascination is, for fun, the core or the primacy of you. Fascination. Fascination is not the consequence of your body or your mind. Your body and mind appear as the consequence of fascination. So, fascination is not injurable. A body, or the identification with a body, is injurable. A mind, a story, a life lived, all the indignities that you've suffered are all the symptoms of injurable. Fascination is not all that concerned about what your mom or your dad or your older brother calls you or does or doesn't do to you. So the implication of, you know, a transcendent adventure for awakening is to discover the invulnerability, the unharmable core or nature of your you as fascination, not as a body mind.
Wow. So it's eternal and immovable.
How much do you want?
Yeah, really. If you want more than that, then I don't know what to do with you. So let's say that's true. It's not, but you know, start somewhere. So fascination and the recognition of fascination, you could say as self, if you want to use a capital S, that's fine, is discovered to be invulnerable, unharmable, not of the nature of space, time, genesis, consequence, birth, death, or any other thing that you can heap upon, that you can and do heap upon yourself, right, as a temporally functioning human being in a somewhat regrettable life. An unsatisfactory life, or even a winning life. You know, a van down by the river, motivational speaker, thrice divorced.
Usually we wind up using the fascination to live out an incredibly not fascinating life.
So this observation makes then samsara as the regrettable tininess of my imaginary life is what has, you could say, occurred of its own organic nature in fascination. Fascination has been hijacked or cajoled, seduced, to imagine itself to be the consequence of my body and my mind, my experience. So then the beatitude of fascination itself, which is non-dual and liberated by definition, has assumed particularization or personification as the likes of you. And I mean, let's give it its due. The miraculous and impersonal capacity for fascination to personify. You didn't do it. You did not do it.
We'll take credit for all.
We tend to, yeah.
Oh, I'm so good, or oh, I'm so bad.
Right.
We'll take a lot of credit for it.
So an appreciation of the impersonal geometry or magical power of fascination to personify as the likes of you, I mean, hats off. I'm not worthy. Well, can you find magic better than that? Not likely.
But see, at that point, you dropped the you, so you're not actually realizing it.
It's too strange, right? Because realization, were there such a thing, we'd have to ask Adam later if there is, because I don't know. Could be. The spontaneously appearing absolute release of fascination, which is not a thing, from consequence, from any kind of incarceration or claim. Yeah.
But
So you're still you, unless you tend to evaporate into, you know, thin air once some revelation occurs, and people have been, you know, there are reports that people have done that, you know, woke up and ceased to be. Sure, I mean, you can find this stuff. Read Dianetics.
Okay, I'm gonna do it by the time we're done here.
Yeah, I am totally out. I am so out of here.
I'll miss you guys.
Stick around for Sunday. Stick around for Sunday. Yeah, disappear Monday morning.
Yeah.
Wait till the food comes.
Yeah, wait till after breakfast.
That's true. If you carry out how much clear, they gave you a briefcase.
Told me to go into the woods and open the briefcase
that I can imagine. And the guy did it. And
inside the briefcase
was a something about we're no longer under the
alien. You're talking Scientology.
Something that
right. Which is good, which is actually wonderfully poetic science fiction, and I don't mean that in a bad way, because what's not science fiction?
I mean, yeah, we're not going to put that up against some of the religion.
Same thing. Yeah, I mean, if we want to anthropomorphize the spell that we're under and blame aliens on it,
yeah, why not?
Knock yourself out. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, going clear is actually a good metaphor.
Going clear is a great metaphor for no longer being under the influence of anything that could make a false claim. But unfortunately, L. Ron Hubbard might not have realized, David Miscavige, the jury's out, whether he's realized or just a psychopath.
A bug.
But that sometimes looks the same, I don't know. Certainly don't want to go off too afield on the Scientology thing, because you'll hear from their attorneys. It's easier to make fun of Buddhism because, you know, they're not represented by legal counsel. You don't want to make that much fun of Byron Katie because she's got attorneys. You know.
Yeah.
Love you, Katie. Love you. Be careful.
Well, you mess with the federal government. You definitely.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So there's a reflex that we have, which is behavioral nature, which says, oh, okay, you tell me a truth, or I find a truth, or I'm sensitive to a certain kind of truth. That truth may have sufficient cojones to liberate me from, you know, the banality of suffering. Well, now I want to own it. I want to own the truth.
I
want to own that truth. Or I want to put it to good use when necessary, when needed, to ameliorate suffering. And or I want to benefit from it.
I want anything.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. We're going to get company, like a lot of them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, we'll have to outshout them then. Oh, goody. Omelette.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
It's not that useful to bedazzle people with how enlightened you may be. Because it's not helpful.
No. Yeah. To them or you.
Yeah, it's not helpful.
Well, it's helpful to some people. They make a lot of money.
Yes.
And usually they're not
that's not the case. And how do you even know what that means?
I owe you your milk, too. I have it behind me. Okay.
Katie's getting it? Okay. Here's some ketchup and other stuff like that.
Thank
right?
you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, do you want
that? You know what just came to mind is like, Jesus didn't walk around telling everybody, I have something you can't have. His message was, here, take a look. You know, I have, you can have this. It's here for everybody. Not that I'm an expert on this message.
Do you think the church would have made more of an effort to, right, represent it that way?
It's never what they were about.
No.
And I really only know the message from where through, I guess, the Course in Miracles and anything.
Right. Yeah, A Course in Miracles is an interesting bridge, right, that brings, can we say, Jesus down to earth?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that take on it is, he didn't have anything that he wasn't trying to just point out that we already have.
Right. And nowhere do I see a quote that says, Jesus didn't say, worship me, he said, worship you.
That'd be a good one.
Yeah.
Whatever is within you,
that
one of
them. He said the kingdom of heaven is within.
There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah.
That's actually splattered all over the place. It's just that right after that, they say, and worship me. It's like, what?
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
That's the irony. Through the whole, like, couple thousand year history of the Catholic Church,
mm-hmm.
the words were always there. The Gospels were said every Sunday,
mm-hmm.
pretty much of what Christ said.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what, like, Martin Luther's platform was. Listen, this is what Christ said, and you're obviously not living that. It was obvious, but
yeah.
it didn't matter.
No.
Because people want to worship, they want to be controlled.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for some reason they think it's easier.
Just give me the box and I'll climb it in.
Mm-hmm.
That's the normal approach.
But the message was never hidden.
If you want to talk about an unkind message for suffering people who think death is kind of the worst thing ever, well, you'll reach heaven when you die. I mean, that's just nasty. This is cruel.
But only if you're lucky. If you jump through
right.
10,000 hoops.
That's right. If you're not lucky, you go the other way and then, oh, you're really screwed.
Maybe you're not really true. Well, we know everybody's hardy and hearty down south.
Mm.
It might be.
Oh, those warmer climates are.
Decadent.
Sounding good.
Yeah.
Sounding good.
More confined than the sky.
well, seemingly concrete, but it's not real.
Well, it's three of the elements, too, fire, earth, and air. And exalts air over the others, which is no reason to do that.
Yeah, we've really just been worshiping air.
Well, good. We worship good. We worship a whole structure of abstract consciousness.
It's like playing air guitar. We play air enlightenment.
Air worship.
Well, maybe we should all just learn how to play really good air.
Nice.
Is there someone there
who
could give us coffee?
Here's
coffee.
She put
him down.
Here's coffee.
I have to brew more, actually.
Thank you.
We sat down a bunch of people and got a group coffee. Mm.
We turn the fascination into obsession. When we become obsessed with these tiny little parameters, we decide to become fascinated by.
And it's a mental kind of process. It's got to be that way. We objectify things and it turns it into...
Well, the Buddhists would like you to believe that it's a mental process, and therefore meditation and all these other rituals are something that you do to retrain the mental process. You could say that those fail.
But it keeps you on the mental level.
Well, the genesis or mechanics of fascination, anthropomorphizing as a creature, is not occurring at a mental level. So if I think that it is the result of how I think or how I feel, in other words, if that is mental, then I dedicate myself to meditation and other trivialities to reorient the mental so that I could be free from samsara or identification. But guess what? You could say the genesis of samsara appearing is not the consequence of anything that's occurring mentally. And even attraction and aversion, which can be accused of being responsible for suffering, are also not appearing mentally or volitionally. So then what exactly are you going to do to unmentalize or rid yourself of attraction and aversion? You're not. If you participate in a lifetime worth of repression, suppression, or mindfulness with the aim of out-mentalizing samsara, you're going to fail.
I'm just being candid. And you got me.
I know, but that's why
you
just kissed my ass.
Very, very, very well.
You should know me by now.
Is the large group of troubles?
I can bring more.
That brings me to a point.
The only thing worse than pain is people are large groups of pain.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
We're still
there's something running past.
I know it was all occurring in our imagination, really. I used to work crappy crap the other day. I was very, like, upset about it for a while. I was like, really?
Okay.
That
means
that
the therapist
might say
that
Yeah, yeah, sure.
My favorite.
Well, the suffering that you're doing, not to accuse you of any, is the same suffering that institutions do. And you could even say it magnified within the context of an institution. Because it's, you know, it's the amplification of the suffering of the so-called all the members. Living in a behavioral cacophony which can get, you know, gnarly and crazy and imbalanced and delusional, and that's how humans roll.
So, as easily as traffic happens, the world flowers and sunshine.
Well, of course, but the release from delusion, were there delusion, were there someone suffering from delusion, and were it possible for the so-called release, can only be exactly what this is. It can't be strategized or turned into, let's say, an advantageous behavioral choice that one makes. Right? When I go to therapy and I get feedback from people I love and trust about how ridiculous life I am and how I might show up so I could reduce my own suffering, then that means they're offering me a behavioral strategy to apply in time so that I might suffer less, or more appropriately, that they might suffer
that's
me less. Yeah,
that's
right?
Usually
yeah, usually how it goes. But all of that remains, as you can see, within the same context of human cacophony of delusion.
Level,
okay.
On that game level, you have the
illusion. Yeah.
Do the recommendations have an actual response to that? If you come from that level, right,
there seems to be causal effects like that. You know, counselors can sometimes help, but there seems to be. No guarantee. There seems to be.
Yeah, I mean, you can get in the rocket ship that launches the what are those cool things that float around with the wings? No, the ones that land.
The
shuttle. You can get on the rocket ship in the cockpit of the shuttle. Sometimes you go into orbit. Sometimes you blow up. Hopefully you go into orbit more frequently than you blow up. Sometimes once you're up there successfully, some land, some blow up. So it's the same with whatever advice you have received or given.
I don't know.
It could go, of course it could go either way, and does. And any commentary about how my behavioral interventions either worked or didn't work for me is just an anecdotal presentation of something long gone. And the strategy that we might deploy...
Well, I got this now. An hour is being itself.
Yes, I'm grabbing sugars.
Something that maybe otherwise it wouldn't be.
That's the question. What would it be if it's not all about you?
Like somebody showing, you know, somebody acting in a way that I think is...
Where else could it go? All anyone has, to be glib, is the presence of their own experience. So anything appearing in that experience, including the apparitional, you know, disquietude of others acting like jackasses, it's you. It's still appearing in you. If someone is kind to you, affectionate toward you, you actually grow to learn to love or trust them, intimately or otherwise. It's all you. Because the experience of affection or trust or, you know, amorous delight is occurring where? Solely in you. Even though someone that you love may be a companion in your so-called experience, all you know is your experience of them. But even that even that report doesn't amount to much, because all that's occurring, if anything is occurring, is nonstop cessation, appearing as a, you know, an impulse field. And the reification or occupying the impulse field as a person, as a body, as a self, as a history, is simply an apparitional expression of the impulse field. You don't really have a future. And so it's maybe not that much of a utility to figure out how you're going to behave more constructively in your future now that you've taken advice from your therapist. But I'm not suggesting don't do that. Discontinuity is this. Cessation, nirvana, discontinuity is exactly this. Right now. Not after you clean your garage or, you know, have an appointment of some kind. If ownership is delusion or whatever we said about it, the only place, were there a place, to rethink that is now. The yoga of it, or the practice of it, is the recognition whether for a second or two or an hour or whatever, that this impulse field arising does not convey agency. But not as a tautology, not as a belief, not as a behavioral, not as an advantageous behavioral strategy. As a fact of recognition. You and all of us. Yeah, let's hold hands. That's a high five all around. Definitely. And it's fun to feel it, to look at it, because the arousal or the arising of a strategy to deploy, to unhinge from suffering, is fascinating to see.
Is what?
Fascinating to see. Is liberating to see. It's not like one stops doing that. I'll have some decaf if there is some. Thank you. That's why someone might ask, hey, Adya Shanti, how do I become enlightened too? Good question. And we do that, we ask that question, usually through the lens of already inhabiting our present experience, right, as a person, place, or thing. No, there is no other way to ask it.
And probably the only way to answer it is, how do you know you're not?
I like the way you put that, how do you
know? How do you know that you're not?
Some arbitrary measure of I should feel better. It should be better.
The reason we're interested in experience management is because we presume ourselves to be a stable recipient of experiencing.
Stable's a key word.
Stable and continuous recipient or agent of experiencing. And that's why we become, and yes, and that's why we're taught, right, to become experience managers. I will subjugate nature.
Define that person. Subjugate nature.
Make nature obey me, right? That's a great metaphor for suffering, right? It's cloudy today. I want sunshine. Which may be a weather reference, it may be a mood reference. Right? It's a mood reference. Oh, it's cloudy today, I want sunshine. Well, you and all of us exactly have mood disorder.
Like my brother's 3-year-old, it's so funny, saying, I'm sad and I don't know what to be, but I can't do anything about it. It's like, he's 3, he knows. Yeah. Like, what is he going to do? He's like, I don't know, he got ideas, you know? It's just kind of happened. Here I am.
Nothing wrong with a keg and a pole dance.
I'll wait till he's 5 at least.
For which part of that?
No, I thought it was
the
potty
job. Do either.
Combo.
Ah, in unison, so to speak.
That's the only way out of stuff. You can't just have a pole dance without
a pole. Well, yes, you can.
Well, it's not that suffering. I have a whole description.
That's a poll that's been enlightened.
Yeah.
And you could dance with it.
Or decaf for anybody?
I'll have some.
You haven't used up your
quota. That's what we do.
So, any more detail for anyone else?
John. And also take the form of this is what's in my lap.
Anybody else?
I'm still freedom.
Yeah. Yep.
Because if you don't have preference, what you're going to do is not enough.
Yes. Well, the language and therefore the nature of questioning shifts when one's present experience is not about experience management. If you're off the wagon of experience management, but this is still so, it encourages, if not forces you, into a different, you could say, line of curiosity, a different line of questioning, a different line of fascination.
So strategizing is not the issue.
No, it's not. No, it's not. The observation that one is caught in the web of strategizing or experience management might have something to do with suffering.
And ameliorating suffering.
Could have some utility. Okay. But to put a fine point on it, if your experience wasn't yours,
experience, but most of the suffering doesn't come from the true experience of ass on chair, warmth on hands. It's not that, it's the thought. Most of the suffering comes from thoughts. Even if you're in pain, it's like, oh my God, it's going to get worse later. I'm going to die from this.
Am I going to go to work with this?
It's usually the mental construct, not the actual experiencing that causes trouble.
Interesting, but thought turns out not to be causal. You'd like to say experiencing is the consequence of the way I'm thinking about things. It's not the
way. That's what Bailey says. She says, what does she say? Thought. Like thought is the beginning of everything. Thought creates everything.
No, she's not. That's not correct. It's just not. I mean, if she calls me, we'll have a conversation about it. She won't. Again, it depends on what you mean by thought. What we mean by thought is the movement of language and meaning-making occurring in your mind.
An attachment to it. Like she differentiates between a thought can go by like a cloud across the sky, or a thought comes by and you grab it and you say, my thought.
Yeah, but
it belongs to me.
Yeah, it's not accurate. It's not really what's happening. Because both of those, though they can be observed, are already symptomatic of something that's too magical for words. You see, once you say, oh, the reason for suffering is because of thought or attachment or identification,
then you think you know
that the reason you are suffering is because you think a certain way or attach a certain way. Now you're in the game again as a deliberate or deluded agent that could somehow be held responsible for how this impulse field shows up.
And there's something I can do about
it. Now you've got a project and something to do about it.
And you're going to fail again.
And you may as well
and you may as well
give Byron Katie your money and get right to it.
I did.
Knock yourself out, of course.
I think maybe
once you have a project, including the noble project of relieving your own suffering, guess who's coming with you?
There is nothing. Self-importance run amok. I was so effing self-important when I was chasing Byron Katie. So important. This was big, important stuff.
And probably a few people noticed that about you, too.
Insufferable.
Yep, we are.
Bad.
Badass insufferables.
See, but you're failing again.
On my own, all I do is suffer. It's a blessing. Or not. I'm just crazy and disoriented all the time.
You appear to be pretty happy. You appear to be disoriented.
Yeah, sure. Sometimes in a nice way, sometimes in an over-caffeinated way. It's kind of fun to, you could say, have a friendly response to a gnarly dissociation or disorientation. Because what you can notice that what you call yourself as a persona in motion or a persona in time is like a reflex of orientation.
Thank you.
It's a reflex of orienting yourself to your life, your stuff, your problems, your demands, your project to become free from suffering. I'm not a good example. Talk to people that are enlightened. They'll tell you better stuff than I can. No, I realize. Yeah. Understood. As you become more, let's just say, organically acquainted with present experience. Thank goodness. No one can or will, so you're on the right track. You're doing great. If you're not getting it, that's a total success. Yeah.
I seem to get it more, you know, in the fuck out of it.
Yep. I know, I get it. I mean, that's why you could say that's the utility of having these kinds of conversations, is to reacquaint yourself with what we can, what we're calling getting it, which may not amount to much, but still, if something's felt.
Practice.
That's practice.
Oh, God.
Yes, practice.
I didn't think we ever did practice. Come on.
No, we don't. Not, to,
the
not deliberately.
It's the failure of the language.
Yeah. I know. Me too.
This orientation has to be the constant state. It has to be. There's nothing to orient to. This orientation has to be your constant state.
You're orienting
to
something.
If you're orienting to something. Awesome.
There you go.
You're succeeding.
Okay, let's say it's the butter. So I have more.
I like it.
Don't blame anything on butter. I love it.
Yeah, really. We play with metaphor, abstraction, hypothetical reference, storytelling, the mechanics of consciousness, not that there are any, simply as strings or keys to play with the nature of awareness. We're not insisting on a destination or a reason or a cause or a solution, a remedy, a repetition of any kind. Because all of those things apply to you as a behavioral system, as a durable and suffering behavioral system. And once you start speaking with people from a remedial point of view as a durable, suffering behavioral system, the only thing that happens is it persists. That's right. Maybe that was, part of the, let's say, disgruntlement, either with Adyashanti or anyone, that contributes knowingly or just through occupational hazard. Right, that suffering persists. Same way you always have, spontaneously, impersonally, born of your conditioning, with as much like and dislike, is present at your disposal. Or you could, sit on a tucket with a nice warm beady and not say a word to anybody. Or you could, like our dear friend Adam did, sit there with a magical meditation pose and a microphone. And relate to people through that vehicle. You see, transmission, if it looks like someone other than you beaming or assisting you in feeling a certain way, it's lovely, but also it's kind of confusing. And if transmission, which is just reality, is sold as a, I'm so grateful you've come to my program, and now I will beam my enlightened presence in your face, you will get high, and then you will come to my next program. Or you will sign up for my correspondence course, because... Yeah, you could write a nice testimonial from my website. And that happens, and that's cool, and I make fun of it, but all right, so what? I mean, I've done my fair share of it, so... But it's more fun or more challenging for you to be the let's say the object and subject of the immediacy of your own experience.
The punchline of all of
it. It's the punchline. Absolute autonomy is the punchline.
If you're paying the freight and they're not giving it to you, then go the other way.
I just got the feeling that if it's behavioral, behaviorism can't be the answer. You have to throw that out the window.
No, it can't be.
So these conversations are acid eating away at it, which, you know, it's kind of the acid eating away at the structure. But ultimately,
loyalty, loyalty in behavior, loyalty in mind, loyalty in suffering and the relief from suffering, loyalty in consciousness, they're all going to set you up. So we might think, oh, enlightenment is this consciousness arriving someday, maybe as soon as possible, free from affliction. Good luck. Better get started. Thank you. So the collapse or cessation of the genesis of association and agency, that once released. Have a nice day. So that's what we're really playing with, right? That's what we're really aiming at, is the observation of the presently spontaneously arising sense of agency acquainted with an impulse field. Because everything that's called ego or suffering or my opinion or my superstition is the consequence of that primacy. So there's no point in messing with your behavior. It's, you know, you're done. It's too late. Your behavior is your behavior. Trying to alleviate suffering mechanically or referentially doesn't work, because the one that insists he or she is suffering is the myth, the primary myth. So the messing around with the content of suffering through behavioral strategies or spiritual strategies is not going to work. You have to go into the belly of the beast, which means you have to, like in a dream when you're being chased by monsters and you're like, wait a second, this is a dream. And then you turn and face the monsters. And that's this yoga, if you call it a yoga. Right now you're under a spell, maybe, maybe not. You're being chased by monsters and you are hoofing it down the road as fast as you can so that you can engage in experience and behavior management so as not to be devoured by monsters. Not going to work, because they will not stop chasing you. And you eventually cannot outrun them. By virtue of running from them, it's already too late. Right? If you're running from monsters, it's too late. They got you. And they don't even have to run that fast. They're just howling, going, oh, look, she's running away from us. We got it. We got this. You know? But what happens to a monster when you turn? She's onto us, Billy. Let's get out of here. But as long as you're running, you know, that's monster heaven. So if this is like a dream, sometimes the metaphor's useful, sometimes not. Depends on the day and the wherever Pluto might be in the sky. If it's like a dream, then the yoga would be, you'd better turn on those monsters right about now. Don't wait another minute to turn on monsters.
Yeah, I don't know how to put this inside of me.
Same with me.
Anything you can do. To deepen the understanding of a demon.
Yes. Sure. Absolutely. Everything you do works. Everything you do works, because even if you're meandering through your life under a spell, that spell is going to break down.
Yes,
of course. Yeah. No, it's a great impulse, and it turns out that let's just say, the most efficient way to open the door for a deeper observation of the transmutative nature of your present transcendence is to do nothing. Because it's mutating of its own accord, more magically than we could ever ascribe. Why not? Everything is appearing. Time and space is appearing. Right? Intuition is appearing. Delusion is appearing. Freedom from delusion is appearing. Everything's appearing. Looming Asian men. Yeah, yeah, I like balloons. Yeah. What occurs for fun? What do we imagine occurs that enables us to insist that this is about something? What is it, or how is it, where, why, when is it? Some minute seed of convincing occurs that convinces you that this is about something. Find that.
For me, it's about itself, which also is an object. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not saying I know either. I don't. But somewhere, not that there's a where, that this impersonal beatitude is shining in the way that it shines. When exactly did it convince you that this is about something? Which includes you.
My innate response is, it just has to be.
Fair enough. That's a fun response. Yeah, it just has to be, which suggests that there's nothing volitional about.
Yeah.
Right?
I have no clue.
The hypnotic suggestion that this is about something.
But that's what's been my life, to figure it out. You know?
Yeah. But this is fun. This is how it spins. You see, it convinces you unconsciously, let's suggest unconsciously, and or non-volitionally, that this is about something. So profoundly that you never even questioned the original hypnotic suggestion that this is about something. You never question it. But now you're on a lifelong course of action to figure this out. When you don't need to figure it out, because it was never about anything in the first place. And once this convinces itself that it's about something, and then flash, bada bing, bada boom, you appear on the scene as an agent, well, now you got a project. Within the context of a myth that you never saw coming. So that's why I'm suggesting go back to, if I can be so bold, and I don't hesitate, to the original myth. What's the original myth? This is about something. A profound...
Yeah, I gotta get
this. Everyone just... Look. But that next sentence was the enlightenment sentence. Then everyone sit up, gotta pee.
This is about something.
Try your best, and the minions flee for a pee break. Hold that thought.
Because I think that we want it to be about something.
Of course. That's the game.
It's terribly dull around here after watching yourself.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Well, that's an interesting exploration. Would it be?
Would it be?
Would it be terribly dull if this wasn't about something? You could say that's the you know, the question of a lifetime.
I'll just go back to my cave.
Go back to your cave. I get it. If I had hair, I'd be hiding behind it too.
Well, I don't. I maybe stuck on a desire or a plan or an object.
Sure.
Whatever. But I feel like there's a deeper.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah,
deeper.
Definitely.
Continually.
Yes.
More.
Yes. Peter Brown says it exactly that way.
Okay.
Continually more.
Right.
Yeah, more and other. Nonstop, more and other.
So when I say is there something I can do, what I mean is that I'm not And it's okay if I don't ever experience more.
Of course.
That's fine.
Yep. Yep.
But I feel, and that's for me, it feels like an intuition that wants to take me.
Well, exactly right. More is what this is. That means you are more. And so yes, it's got you and it wants to take you.
All right.
Tell it can have me too.
yeah, and if you know anyone at the top, let them know we're interested.
Yeah, put in a good word.
Put in a good word for the rest of us, blue collar, failing, miserably crappy aspirants from hell. I'll have what she's having. That's right. There is no choice. Yeah. This could be fun. The absolute relaxation from agency and the absolute relaxation that this must be the best it could possibly be lets you and it off the hook.
Totally.
So you let yourself and this off the hook. No demand is placed upon it or yourself. No, you could say, interest in experience management.
Okay, and then maybe the trick is to relax.
It's always been that.
Oh damn! I'm like,
yeah.
This is the way down path.
But even.
Oh damn!
But even in the midst of. But even in the midst of activized disorientation or emotional frenzies of any kind, does not interfere. Is not mutually exclusive with relax.
I just can relax you more.
Well, whatever it is that assumes identity with fascination is of the nature of a, call it meta-intelligence or meta-stupidity, that we have no, thankfully, control over. So the notion of relax in all of these Gnostic traditions is highly encouraged.
Not for trying so hard.
Yeah.
That might be one of the points of meditation.
Absolutely. Meditation and mindfulness and everything in between are, let's say, ways of setting the stage to optimize availability.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a lot of fun.
I want to see his poems.
Does he have poems?
Oh, you know, if you're up, if you're free at 7, expose yourself and see what happens. You know, I woke up yesterday and I was like,
not like that, Nick.
You know,
well,
like, yeah,
you
really.
Were like that, I guess. They're like, show me your palms, I'll show you.
My palms. You know, really. Show you my buns.
Well, and then all of a sudden, we're all turned from him to you. Why is everybody looking at her?
We like your palms better, sweetie.
She's naked.
Yeah, really. Enlightened, naked. Enlightened, naked.
Yeah,
that's tough decision.
That's a tough decision.
Well, we finally made it back to the important topic.
Yeah, that's right.
We are a little slow to talk.
Boobies are us. Yeah, it took a while. Sorry it took so long to get back to what's really true.
Who says it's not a dual universe?
That's right. Here's your non-duality right here.
What about these? That's what you should do with that. What about these two?
You can't take this group anywhere.
It's a good thing Dave's here for reinforcements. You're not alone.
I think you could take him that place that had that pole in
the pole.
It's not the fire department.
Well, you could take him there too. There's a pole. Firemen would enjoy it.
Freedom from becoming. Let's say present experiences, so whatever that may imply to you. If it is accompanied by becoming, then restlessness and fantasy has got the better of you. I'm not saying that's good or bad, or that you should do anything about it. But the impulse of go back to the cave, smart move. Just the really. Yeah. A push up with a nice low cut sweater thing going on and stare right back at him.
He's skinny.
Absolutely.
That's
he's
all
skinny.
We know is that he's skinny.
No, he's slender.
Slender, that's true. Slender, sorry.
He's cute, he's got a winning smile, beautiful, enlightened eyes. He's the total package.
And he's British.
British, how do you show your boots?
The total package.
He speaks the Queen and the King's English, so.
Yeah, and it says that he looks like they like boots.
It's one of his links.
Well, bring him with you tonight, baby. Yeah, don't leave him at home.
Need to ask lots of questions.
You seriously went off the rails today.
Apparently so.
If Dennis anywhere near the gutter, and we go right.
Yeah, woo!
We need those little, like, support cowpaws bracelets or something.
Yeah.
Save the top
One thing that could be helpful is that
it's not really important what else is this.
We dedicate so much of our
give up
help me
give up.
Okay, that was going to be the sentence that did it for all of us, and you made him lose.
Small plates.
Yeah, or that I could be held responsible for it.
You never know what he was going to say.
She doesn't know about it.
It's possible that your adventure can shift. One side of the adventure is the amelioration of suffering, which is circumstantial and behavioral and psychic and emotional. So we might dedicate ourselves to the amelioration of suffering for, you know, some number of decades. What could be fun is, rather than dedicate yourself to the amelioration of suffering, dedicate yourself to not knowing what this is in the first place. Yeah.